Well, almost all of you came here this morning in a car, and I would venture to say that almost none of you drove here in silence. You listened to something. Maybe you listened to digital music, a satellite station, or even a podcast. If you're old school, like Chris, you popped in a CD. If you're really old school, maybe you listened to a cassette tape. And if you're old, like me, you remember those 8-track players. When I was a kid, we listened to a lot of Beach Boys in our Ford LTD station wagon with standard 8-track player. But there will always be people, young and old, who like to listen to the radio. Now, the name Edwin Armstrong probably doesn't ring any bells for a lot of you, and that's too bad, because about 100 years ago, Edwin Armstrong changed the world. He changed the world of communications, he changed the world of news, entertainment, and music, yet he's largely been forgotten by history. Well, we're going to give him his props this morning for the technological breakthrough for which he is responsible, and he deserves it, because Edwin Armstrong was the inventor of FM radio. With every innovation, however, comes growing pains. Great advancements are usually wrought with great suffering and hardship. And no one understood this better than Edwin Armstrong. Edwin Armstrong was born into a good Christian family in New York City on December 18, 1890. And the family did well. They were comfortably in the middle class. But Edwin was a peculiar child. He suffered from rheumatic fever, which gave him a motor tic that lasted the rest of his life. And his illness caused him to miss a lot of school. But Edwin showed from an early age an unusual proficiency for all things electrical and mechanical, and he spent hours in solitude tinkering with his gadgets. Eventually, Edwin became a very accomplished young man. He graduated from Columbia University in 1913 with a degree in electrical engineering before serving in the Signal Corps during World War I. Then back at Columbia, he earned a professorship of electrical engineering. But in his free time, Edwin Armstrong was a radio enthusiast. Now, keep in mind that radio at the time wasn't really as we know it today. The most exciting things transmitted over the radio was the faint sound of Morse code, transmissions that came mainly from ships at sea. But Armstrong loved it, and during his time in the service, he had discovered some innovative ways to improve on this existing radio technology. Previously, radio signals could only be heard by a person wearing headphones while sitting in a quiet room, but Armstrong developed a way to amplify the sounds through a loudspeaker by using positive feedback. This process became known as regeneration. It was a huge breakthrough, and Armstrong was awarded a patent for it. But instead of enjoying the immediate profits that were rightfully his, Armstrong was sued by another inventor named Lee DeForest. DeForest claimed that he had already invented regeneration, even though he couldn't explain how it worked under oath. But the expensive legal wrangling went on for years. And since the courts didn't understand the technology, they ruled in favor of DeForest on a technicality. The academic world was shocked and appalled. Everyone knew that Armstrong was the rightful patent holder. Dejected, Armstrong tried to return the award he had won for his invention, but the committee wouldn't have it. They affirmed that Armstrong was right. And so Edwin Armstrong soldiered on. And he would go on to develop an innovation in radio that far exceeded regeneration. Now, if you're an expert in these things, please forgive me as I butcher this explanation. Before Armstrong, all radio signals used amplitude modulation. We know it today as AM radio. But the problem with amplitude modulation is that it's vulnerable to static and interference by thunderstorms, machinery, and other electrical disturbances. Maybe you've been frustrated by this when listening to an AM station. But Armstrong figured out how to modulate the frequency rather than the amplitude, which eliminated the static and interference. Today we call frequency modulation FM radio. And when Armstrong demonstrated the clarity of FM radio to his friend David Sarnoff, he knew it was a game changer. Now, David Sarnoff was a big deal. He eventually became the president of the Radio Corporation of America, RCA, which was the world's leading manufacturer of AM radio. And he also ran the national broadcasting company, NBC, which owned the world's largest network of AM radio stations and eventually television stations. So Sarnoff was floored by Armstrong's demonstration. FM radio was plainly superior to AM radio. It could pick up signals loud and clear from all over the country. FM was clearly the future of radio, and Edwin Armstrong was set to benefit immensely from the technological changes that were obviously coming to the communications industry. But that's when Armstrong was betrayed. Sarnoff knew that once FM radio caught on, it would render all of RCA's AM products obsolete. So instead of adapting to this new reality, RCA lobbied Congress and the FCC to blackball FM radio and refuse Armstrong licensing. Man, that's cold. But Armstrong kept clawing and eventually won permission to start his own tiny FM station. But just as he was starting to gain some traction, the FCC kicked off FM radio from its place on the spectrum to make room for television signals, which, not coincidentally, benefited NBC. As a result, every FM transmitter and receiver in the country was rendered obsolete overnight. When the Federal Communications Commission declared that the public owned the airways, what they really meant was that they owned them. The very public that the government was entrusted to protect was being refused an immensely superior product by that government. And it was all thanks to cronyism. So FM radio had to start all over again, but Armstrong kept fighting. He paid an army of lawyers to push his rights in court and even testified before Congress. But Congress was still in the pocket of AM radio, and Congress did what Congress does best. They bloviated and wasted time and ignored the problem despite Armstrong clearly being in the right. And RCA, with their deep pockets, continued to bury him in litigation. Edwin Armstrong was perpetually sidetracked, and his brilliant work suffered. Friends estimated that 90% of his time was consumed fighting legal battles. And his family suffered. The stress eventually got to Armstrong, and one day he threatened his wife with a fireplace poker, and so she left him. And finally, on February 1st, 1954, Edwin Armstrong penned a note to his wife, got dressed for the cold, and jumped out the window of his 13th floor Manhattan apartment. He was 63 years old. Fortunately, his wife was able to settle with RCA after his death, and she was financially secure for the rest of her life. But Edwin Armstrong's technological breakthrough should have made him fabulously wealthy. It should have freed up more time to spend with his family. Instead, his legal fees left him in debt the rest of his life. And his obsession with the new technology of FM radio ended up costing him his career, his marriage, and ultimately his life. What a tragedy. Just think of all the hurt and the lost potential. Edwin Armstrong should have been changing the world with even greater breakthroughs, but he got distracted by the very innovations that promised him a life of leisure. Technological breakthroughs are great as long as they do what they were designed to do. But as we'll see in today's passage, sometimes breaking through the technology is even more important than the technology itself. In fact, it just might save your life. So please, turn in your Bibles to 1 Timothy chapter 5 this morning. 1 Timothy 5, we're going to look at verses 9 through 15. If you don't have a Bible, you're welcome to take out one of ours from the shelf underneath the pew in front of you and turn to page 993. Or you can just use your smartphone to scan the QR code on the worksheet in your bulletin. And of course, we'll have the scriptures up on the screen. Well, it's summertime, and this summer I wanted to do something a little bit different. For a long time, there have been many random topics swirling around in my head that I just haven't been able to get to in our normal flow of sermon series. And so why not just have an entire series on those topics? And that's what this sequence of unrelated topics is all about. This summer, we're going to talk about everything under the sun. And the first topic I wanted to talk about this summer is maybe the most pressing issue of our modern day. It's technology. There's a new technological breakthrough every day. But unfortunately, as we know all too well, every breakthrough that promises to make our lives more fulfilling just seems to distract us from what really matters. And they seem to sap our potential. Instead of order and happiness, they bring chaos and misery. So as it turns out, the life and death of Edwin Armstrong were just harbingers of things to come. So here's what's shocking. The Apostle Paul predicted all these problems that technology would bring. He didn't know about the specific breakthroughs, of course, but he knew all about people. He knew all about our vulnerabilities to those things that present easy outward fixes to deep inner problems. And as we'll see, Paul was way ahead of his time. The technology, it turns out, would have to catch up with him. And so let's look at 1 Timothy chapter 5, starting in verse 9. Paul wrote this to Timothy. He said, "Let a widow be enrolled if she is not less than 60 years of age, having been the wife of one husband, and having a reputation for good works. If she has brought up children, has shown hospitality, has washed the feet of the saints, has cared for the afflicted, and has devoted herself to every good work. But refuse to enroll younger widows, for when their passions draw them away from Christ, they desire to marry, and so incur condemnation for having abandoned their former faith. Besides that, they learn to be idlers, going about from house to house, and not only idlers, but also gossips and busybodies, saying what they should not. So I would have younger widows marry, bear children, manage their households, and give the adversary no occasion for slander, for some have already strayed after Satan." Okay, this must be the first time in history that this passage has been used to talk about technology. In this New Testament letter, the Apostle Paul was addressing his protege Timothy. Paul had trained Timothy to shepherd the flock in the city of Ephesus. And at some point before the writing of this letter, Timothy had written to Paul asking for his advice on some problems he was having in the church. Well, one of those problems was the charity he had set up for widows. At this time, women didn't really have an opportunity to generate income. They didn't hold regular jobs. And so when a woman's husband died, she was in real trouble financially, especially if there was no family left to support her. And Timothy saw this need, so he set up a charity to help the widows in his congregation. But it wasn't going so well. Some families simply shirked their responsibility to care for their widows and dumped them off on the church. Other widows just took the money and sat idle, not contributing anything at all to the rest of the community. So this portion of Paul's letter to Timothy addressed some of these problems. But what does an ancient charity for widows have anything to do with modern day technology? Well, the whole point of technological advancement is to give us more free time, right? Technology is supposed to make our lives easier, giving us more time to enjoy the important things in life. And according to this definition, there was technology in Paul's time. There weren't electronics and fancy gadgets, but there were new innovations all the time. And one of those innovations was Timothy's charity for widows. It was supposed to make the lives of widows easier. But in reality, it almost destroyed some of them. It made life too easy, gave them too much free time. It distracted them from the things that mattered most. And it caused some problems that are coincidentally very familiar to us today. So Paul told Timothy to only support the older widows. Most young women were able to care for themselves. Then he commanded that the widows who were enrolled in the program needed to work. He didn't want them to receive the money from the church, but then have all the free time in the world to do whatever. Because when that happens, three problems start to emerge. And these problems, not coincidentally, are the exact same problems that technology sometimes causes us today. Our technological breakthroughs give us an immense amount of free time. We have more free time than we know what to do with. And when that happens, the exact same problems result. So our main point from today's passage is this, and it's in your bulletin if you'd like to write it down. The main point is, the more technologies change, the more people stay the same. The more technologies change, the more people stay the same. One of the most colorful characters in French history is Victor Hugo. He's the author of Les Misérables, and the people of Paris absolutely loved Victor Hugo. He was a champion for the poor and the oppressed, even though he was rich and privileged. He was paid more for Les Misérables than anyone had ever been paid for a work of literature and history. And Hugo needed that money to keep up with his opulent lifestyle. Hugo loved to party. He loved to host dozens of guests at his home every night for dinner. He loved party gossip, and he knew some great party tricks. He would impress his guests by swallowing an orange whole. He also loved to go to concerts. He loved theater. But more than anything, he loved to visit brothels. In fact, he was such a prolific frequenter that every brothel in Paris shut down on the day of his funeral to show their respects. But Hugo's opulent lifestyle really cut into his writing time, and his procrastination drove his publishers crazy. In the summer of 1829, Hugo promised to have his next novel, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, written within a year. Well, the deadline came and went, and Hugo hadn't written a single word. There were just too many distractions out there, and his idleness finally caught up to him. But Hugo somehow convinced the publisher to give him 6 more months. So how could the notoriously distracted author crank out a world-class novel in just 6 months? Well, it was simple. He told his assistant to take all his clothes. Not even Victor Hugo would walk around outside half-naked, nor could he have people over for dinner. And with nothing to do but write, Victor Hugo turned in Hunchback 2 weeks ahead of schedule. You see, technology changes, but people don't. Victor Hugo was distracted by the 19th century nightlife of Paris. He was reduced to idleness by the gossip, entertainment, and sensuality that was lurking just outside his door, and he could indulge in all of it because he was rich. But today, all these things are available to anyone. And no one needs to go outside. Thanks to modern technology, all these things fit into the palm of your hand. So Paul didn't need to see the technology. He knew people. And people don't really change. He saw this in the Old Testament wisdom literature. Ecclesiastes 6:11 says, "Whatever has come to be has already been named, and it is known what man is." Paul told the people of Lystra that we're all the same. Acts 14, "Men, why are you doing these things? We are also men of like nature with you, and we bring you good news." The apostle James knew this, that all people throughout all centuries are basically the same. He wrote, "Elijah was a man with a nature like ours, and he prayed fervently that it might not rain, and for 3 years and 6 months, it did not rain on the earth." But most of all, Jesus knew that people just don't change over the years. He said in John 2, "But Jesus, on his part, did not entrust himself to them because he knew all people and needed no one to bear witness about man, for he himself knew what was in man." So the things that happen to us when technology gives us more freedom and more distractions are the same things that happened to Victor Hugo in his time with more free time and more distractions. And it was the same thing that happened to the widows in Paul's time when they had more free time, more distractions, when they didn't have to work anymore. It's all the same. Paul recognized 3 specific problems that arrive in situations like this, and they should look very familiar to us. So let's read the passage again, this time in a different translation, and let's see if you can pick out the 3 specific problems Paul identified when people like us with our technology, Victor Hugo, and these widows had all this free time on their hands. 2 Timothy 5, let's just read verses 11 through 13. It says, "As for younger widows, do not put them on such a list, for when their sensual desires overcome their dedication to Christ, they want to marry. Thus they bring judgment on themselves because they have broken their first pledge. Besides, they get into the habit of being idle and going about from house to house. And not only do they become idlers, but they also, but also busybodies who talk nonsense, saying things they ought not to." So do you see what happens when we have too much idle time? But I'll suggest that it's even harder for us to avoid these problems because today's technology doesn't just promise to free us up to do other things. Technology has become the other things. The technology itself sucks our free time. Because we love our smartphones and we love social media, And all of these things are wonderful, by the way. I've got no problem with any of them. But Paul saw the risks before any of these technologies came into existence, because people over the centuries don't change. So what are the three potential pitfalls of any new innovations according to the Apostle Paul? Well, the first possible problem was the stoking of sensual desires. Wow, he really hit that nail on the head, didn't he? Today's technology and our sensual desires go hand in hand. There's no end to the sensual desires found on the internet. But that's not all. The second potential problem Paul mentioned in this passage was becoming busybodies. In other words, too much free time leads to snooping, gossip, and other nonsense talk. Isn't that the whole point of social media? Paul nailed it again. And finally, Paul mentions how we are in danger of becoming idlers. In other words, when we have more free time, we just end up wasting it on worthless stuff. And Paul rests his case. The more technologies change, the more people stay the same. Paul saw it all, folks. If someone could have somehow shown the Apostle Paul what we are able to do on our smartphones today, then he could have accurately predicted what would come next. He knew we'd be hopelessly distracted by it, and he knew that we'd use it to indulge in sensuality, gossip, and time-wasting. And folks, I'm no Puritan. I have no desire to shame you. I have no desire to discipline you just for discipline's sake. I don't want your life to be grim and stoic. That's what religion wants. But I just know that these distractions, while promising you a temporary high, are really making us miserable in the long run. And when we're miserable, we're no good for anyone. But there's hope. We don't have to be miserable anymore. So let's talk about these specific problems that Paul mentioned in the context of today's technology. First, let's talk about sensual desires, because we've come a long way from dirty magazines, haven't we? Today, we carry around a portal to unlimited pornography in our pockets, and we don't talk about it much in church, do we? Our Christian culture has put such a stigma on sex addiction that no one dares come into the light. But if you have kids or grandkids, I need you to listen to me very carefully. It's different than when we were little. It's not a matter of if they will be exposed to pornography, it's when. And we need to face this reality. It's just too easy to find anymore. You don't need to steal it from the truck stop anymore. It's everywhere. And I hope your kids and grandkids don't have unlimited, unmonitored access to the internet on their smartphones. I hope there are blocks on their tablets and their computers. But every prudent step we take to protect them can be completely undone by their friends showing them something inappropriate on their smartphones. Because we can't be naive. Most parents, there's no blocks. There's no checks and balances, and their kids have unfettered access. So you could be as careful as possible, but their friends could just show them something. And that's not defeatism, mind you. I'm not trying to scare you. I'm just trying to prepare you. Eventually, they will see it, either by accident or by their friends or however. And hopefully, with the proper precautions, we can push back their first exposure until a time when their brains are more developed. But that exposure will happen. So for heaven's sakes, talk to them about it. Talk to your boys and talk to your girls. It's important to try to keep them from it, but it's just as crucial to teach them what they do when they are exposed to it. Teach them how to look away from it. Help them to understand that you can't monitor everything and that they need to take responsibility for their own actions. Tell them that they won't ever get into trouble for coming to you for help with it. And when you find it, maybe on their tablet or their smartphone or their computer, Don't come at them with shock and anger and shame. What good is that going to do? If shame was enough to save people from the grip of pornography, then the church would have no problem with it at all, right? Because that's the tactic the church has been taking in our Christian culture for the past 30 years. But listen, folks, many good Christian men and women are struggling to break the hold that pornography has on their lives. And it's a real problem. But do you know what is also a real problem? It's when Christians sit in judgment over these people. Listen, I can work with an addict who knows that he or she has a problem, but I can't work with someone who is appalled by everyone else's problems. Because if someone thinks that those people are nothing but disgusting perverts, then I need you to understand how it probably started for them. They probably stumbled across it as a kid while performing a perfectly innocent internet search, or some friend showed them something, and then their curiosity got the best of them. They were just kids after all, and it broke their brains. It rewired their hardware, much like alcoholism does. And they didn't know what to do about it. They certainly couldn't come to the church for help. They already felt bad enough, so they fell deeper and deeper into despair. They don't like it. They hate it. They know it's ruining their intimate relationships, but they keep going back because their brains need it. And that doesn't absolve them of responsibility, of course. Everyone's responsible for the choices they make, no matter what their age is. But listen, we're not your normal church here. You are safe here. You're not alone. You won't lose your ministry. You won't be, ratted out to the deacon board if you look for help. We have no interest in making examples out of people. We just want to help people. And so come and get the help you need. I'm unshockable at this point. I've been doing this job a long time. I did youth ministry before this, so nothing shocks me anymore. I've heard it all. So don't suffer in silence. I promise you, you won't regret it. Next, there's Paul's warning for busybodies, gossip, and those who just can't seem to mind their own business. Because that's what drives social media, doesn't it? Now, there's nothing wrong with the vehicle, right? I mean, Snapchat, TikTok, old person, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and all the rest, they're just completely neutral forums. It's human nature that has made them a mess. People don't change, remember? But the platforms themselves are fine. So don't sit in judgment. Now, if you're old like me, then you don't quite understand what social media does for young people. If a kid is not on any form of social media, then he's completely left out of the conversation. He has no idea what's going on in his peer group. He's an outsider. What the telephone was to older generations, YouTube is to this current generation. I mean, how would you like it if I told you to throw away your telephone just because it can be misused? So if you can honestly say that your participation in social media makes your life happier and more fulfilled, then I say enjoy it. But if you have a sneaking suspicion that it's secretly making you miserable, then I want to help you. Listen, there's a reason Paul told us not to be nosy. We simply weren't meant to know so much about our casual acquaintances, and we weren't meant to find our validation in comparing ourselves to them. Everyone loves to put up pictures of their kids on Facebook, when they make the National Honor Society. But no one announces it on Twitter when their, kid gets an abortion. You'll never win that comparison game. Your real life will never match someone else's social media presence. So if you can enjoy social media without comparing your kids or comparing your weight loss or comparing your vacations, then I say more power to you. But never underestimate the beauty of a private life. Paul said in 1 Thessalonians 4:11, aspire to live quietly and to mind your own affairs and to work with your hands as we instructed you. There's beauty in the private life. And finally, Paul warned against idleness. Now, we need to recognize that Paul isn't your dad who's always yelling at you for being lazy. Paul's motivation was to help his readers live the happiest, most fulfilling life possible. And he knew that the key to fulfillment in life was not unlimited free time to pursue our whims. Technology promises more free time, but that's not necessarily what we need. Because we get so distracted, like Edwin Armstrong, our potential just gets sapped. And the short-term dopamine bursts of immediate gratification take the place of genuine, long-term joy and accomplishment in life. Here's the good news. Paul didn't tell Timothy to discontinue that which was making these widows' lives easier. The innovation wasn't the problem. FM radio wasn't the problem. TikTok isn't the problem. Smartphones aren't the problem. In fact, technology gives us an opportunity to exceed our potential as people. It gives us more time to pursue what's truly meaningful in life. So rather than like get all bent out of shape and change our technology, all these kids these days, you know, instead of getting all bent out of shape about it, we need to change who we are as people. Throwing away your smartphone does no good if your insides are messed up. We'll just find other outlets for our sensuality and other venues to gossip. We'll just waste our time on other nonsense. And so let's keep the good stuff that makes our lives more convenient, but be more purposeful in how we use the extra time these things allow us. That's what Paul advised the widows in today's passage. People don't change. The solutions are the same. 1 Timothy 5:14, he says, so I encourage younger widows to marry, to have children, to manage their homes, and to give the enemy no opportunity for slander. And so the answer is to have more babies? Well, it might be, but not necessarily. Paul was telling the widows of his time to use their time to do things that matter. They were to fill their time with things that were substantive. Maybe that was raising a family. Maybe that was doing some other work. That's how you break through. And that goes for all of us, not just widows. And so our application from today's passage is this. The application is subsist on substance. Subsist on substance. The 19th century was the golden age of exploration. It had been so exciting back then. And one of the greatest explorers of the Arctic frontier was a Canadian named Vilhelmer Stephenson. Stephenson discovered many unmapped Arctic lands and was a student of the Inuit peoples. And he was amazed by the vitality of the Inuit peoples, despite their subsisting on nothing but seal and fish. There are no gardens in the Arctic, so these people lived almost exclusively on meat. And they were just fine. Man cannot live on bread alone, lest he contract scurvy. But Stephenson believed that man could live on meat alone. So he began promoting an all-meat diet. My hero. Of course, the vegetarians of the time were mortified. They thought they held the highest dietary standards. But Stephenson proved that meat was enough. In fact, he lived to the ripe age of 82. But Stephenson observed that there was one meat that wasn't quite enough for a man to subsist on. Rabbits are found in almost every part of the world. They live in deserts, they live in wetlands, they live where it's cold, they live where it's hot. They reproduce prolifically, and they're easy to hunt, even without guns. Well, Stephenson observed that there were times in the Arctic forests of North America where the indigenous people would have nothing to subsist on for months other than rabbits. There's no vegetation, fruit, or other animals anywhere to be found. But that's fine. That's fine, right? Because the Inuit people survived on meat alone. But a strange thing happened to these forest people. They would eat and eat and eat rabbit meat until their bellies were distended, yet they'd still show signs of starvation. As it turns out, the rabbit meat was just too lean. Today we call this protein poisoning. We need to consume like fats to survive, and there are plenty of fats in fish and seal. But no matter how much you fill your body with rabbit meat, you cannot subsist on it. And no matter how much technology and entertainment and free time we try to fill our lives with, fully understanding that there's nothing wrong with any of these things, we still cannot subsist on them alone. Without things of real substance in our lives, free time becomes destructive. Without work, play means nothing. Without play, work becomes unfulfilling. This was King Solomon's conclusion anyway. I love King Solomon. He was so wise. Ecclesiastes 2, he said, "There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in what? In his free time? No. In his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God." So the eating and drinking and enjoyment are great, but there's no real joy without the toil. We need both. We need work and we need fun. We need buddies and we need family. We need church and we need sports. We need free time that the technology allows, but we also need to do hard, substantive toil. Edwin Armstrong thought that his technological breakthrough would change his life, but the endless distractions it caused ended up destroying him. Well, the more technologies change, the more we stay the same. We simply cannot subsist on sensuality, gossip, and idleness. In order to truly enjoy the free time that technology allows us, we need to engage in things of substance. We won't be saved by technological breakthroughs. We'll be saved by breaking through the hold technology has on us. But we're going to go even deeper next week, because as we see all over the news and we see over and over again, even in our own lives and the lives of those around us, it's no secret that our mental health in this country is really struggling, right? Extreme ways and in subtle ways in most of our lives. And it's a direct result, I'm convinced, of our modern society. But again, the Bible addressed these things even before we had names for them. So I'm going to encourage you to read Psalm 42 through 43 this week, and you bring a friend next Sunday as we dive into the psyche of King David. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much that you love us so much. And Lord, I thank you for all of these wonderful technologies that you have really inspired men and women to create for us to enjoy. And I thank you, Lord, that for these different avenues that we have that makes our lives easier. And Lord, I thank you there's nothing wrong with those things and we don't have to get bent out of shape about it. But Lord, I do pray you would change us on the inside as people, as we live with these new technologies. And Lord, I pray that we could find true subsistence in the things of substance in life. I pray, Lord, that we could enjoy the free time that these things give us in wonderful ways, but also, Lord, that we wouldn't forget to do things of substance and to work hard, and so we can enjoy both to the maximum potential. I pray, Lord, that these technologies you blessed us with would make us better people to do even greater works that we normally wouldn't have been able to do. And I pray that we would truly reach our potential as your people here in this community. God, thank you that you are so gracious with us. You forgive us, Lord, when we misuse these things. Lord, when these things tend to break our minds, you can heal us. You forgive us. You show us grace. You don't shame us.
I thank you for that, Jesus. You're so good to us. We never forget what you've done for us. So I pray we would go out today in freedom and enjoy, enjoying all the good things you've provided for us. And we pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.